100 ohms of inductive reactance, the load would have to have 50 ohms and 100 ohms of capacitive reactance. That's what's called a conjugate match. Same type of reactance, but same magnitude, but opposite type of reactance. Oh, go ahead.
Wesley, you wanted to comment? By the way, people out there, sometimes that's designated as the J value, the imaginary number of reactances. So you'll get something like, you know, 10 ohms plus 3.5 J or something like that. Wesley, what do you want to say?
We're talking about the easiest way to explain. The easiest possible way to explain. And I hope with your help, we can find a way to explain. So, impedance is the measure of opposition of the circuit that offers fluctuating current in AC circuit. So it is a combination of two components, resistance and reactance. But if we actually want to use the simple language, we say we have two guys. One guy is opposing, and his name is resistance, and the other guy is opposing, and his name is reactance. But the guy that is whose name is reactance has two nature. One is capacitive, and one is inductive. And actually, that guy that is reactance, we can eliminate. We have to be able to eliminate the guy that is resistance. But we would be able to eliminate the guy that is reactance because the two nature of that guy are opposing each other. So impedance is actually reactance plus resistance. So if we take off the reactance, then we are left with the resistance. And the best way to satisfy the circuit or the transmission line is to put at the end of the transmission line the load, the proper load. Not too heavy, not too light, just the proper load. And this is in our case with you. Maybe Dr. Wei would be able to make something much easier or much more explaining out of that. Back to you.
AC2GS. Well, the problem is the more we talk about it, the less simple it is and the more complicated it gets, because we've been down this road a dozen times. I mean, one of the things about resonance of antennas, at the resonant point in antenna, effectively, its capacitive and inductive reactance cancels each other out because they're phase angles. So you can shift phase angles clockwise and counterclockwise, and you can get it back to zero. And what's left is radiation resistance and non-radiation resistance. And that's what a resonant antenna ultimately is. So how you plug that in the rest of our conversation, again, it unfortunately, whenever we've tried this, people offer different suggestions, and it kind of layers up to the onion where there's a lot of complications going on, unfortunately.
November 2 VHC.
Charlie. I'm sorry, two people double. Try again, and I don't know how to tell you who goes first.
HK, November 2 Zulu Charlie.
Yes, John.
Okay, so I speak for myself. I follow the DC. I follow the other gentleman's explanation perfectly with eliminating the inductive reactance with an negative capacitive reactance. Okay, great. I just got one question. Going back to my example, if you had an LC circuit and it wasn't giving you a zero, it was giving you an impedance, then let's just say it was plus J25, which would be an inductive reactance. And
sorry, guys. All-Star did a strange thing. John, are you still with us?
Well, which John? You mean BDH?
Yeah, I forgot. We have a lot of Johns. I was talking about N2ZC. I think something got screwed up with the All-Star, which tends to screw up the Echo Link. Yeah, apparently the server, the W2VL server kind of died. I think they died, because the rest of my computer stuff is working perfectly. So the only thing that's a little wonky is the IP address that LineMark is using. Okay, let me ask. I know, John, you're coming out of Glen Oaks, right?
You mean me, VDH?
Yes, VDH.
I'm coming through Glen Oaks, yes.
Okay, now the big question is anyone coming out of Selden? Because my guess is that the whole link is kaput. Yeah, that would pretty much suggest that Selden's gone, Echolink is gone, All-Star is gone. It's just us people here on Glen Oaks right now. And I can't even reboot it because I can't even get into their web server anymore. I theoretically, if I could get it into their web server, I could reboot pieces of it, but it's the whole, apparently, web server that's gone out to lunch.
Now we copy you, AC2Field.
Ah, that's very good. Well, you know, now I'm just on RF like the rest of you guys. Are you coming out of Selden or are you coming out of Glen Oaks, Jeff?
AC2PL transmitting from Westchester County, so I'm assuming Glen Oaks.
Okay, again, that makes sense. The entire All-Star Echo Link Selden connection has been severed. Well, I guess we'll have to table our discussion about impedances and such niceties until John N2ZC can reestablish maybe later tonight here, but probably next Sunday. I think something hardware-wise went kaflooey, so that's going to require a trip to where the repeater is. Anyone else out there with any questions or topics for discussion before we move on? Okay, I guess then we should drop. By the way, there was some gentleman whose call sign ended in VW who doubled with someone else. If he happens to be on the Glen Oaks repeater, do you want to tell us what you wanted to say? Well, I guess not. He was probably part of that whole connection. Wesley, I guess it's your turn tonight.
Hey, I have a few topics, ham radio related. One is N2XG and steaming coax. Steaming, STEAMING coax. Okay. So it looks unfamiliar, but actually is about good 43 meters. And it's a new form of it. And I was able to get some information about it. So, Bird model 43 watt meter is industry standard, 450 kilohertz to 1.2 gigahertz, from 100 milliwatts to 10 kilowatts. You know that. But then, about a few months ago, there was a guy who decided from Canada, young guy from Canada, extremely talented electronic engineer, who says he's a RF broadcast technician, freelance 3D circuit product designer, bounty hunter, and a semi-truck trailer mechanic, heavy machine operator. So something that I really like, which is electronic mechanics and some of the software guy. Let me drop. Okay. He decided that he wants to make something for ham radio community and for his pocket as well. That is very much inexpensive. So you take out the heart of, actually not the heart, the meter, the analog meter that you have in BERT, and you put his module. The his module is electronic with electronic display. And in, this is called a DWM-2. DWM-2, it was DWM-1, and people bought it, so it's a watt meter by Applied Engineering Science. In his website, he doesn't call himself Applied Engineering Science, but he offers that for $275 plus tax and shipping. And what it does is, if I'm looking at the ham.net, for reviews for the WM-2, it's 5 stars almost everywhere. So what they say is the watt meter may have many features apparatus we find helpful. It simultaneously provides for measurement forward, reflected, and peak power, as well as VSWR using display, digitized display. In addition, there is a pseudo analog display providing VSWR and forward power, very helpful for tuning transmitters, power amplifiers, and other devices. And it is kind of interesting. It is traceable to NIST. Is it traceable or is it approved? That's my question. Let me drop. Okay, so it has color graphic display. I saw it only in black and white, but they say color graphic display and a nice presentation information. DWM-2 comes with directional coupling covering 1 to 60 megahertz. Of course, you can have other couplers, plug-in devices, like in original BERT meter, BERT 43 meter, and I believe based on the reviews, some guys already purchased it. And they are highly satisfied with it. There is a video I sent to Dr. Roy by Mr. BBI. So it's a channel of Mr. BBI. The guy is has 33,300 subscribers, and it's pretty much known in ham radio community. Dr. Roy, do you have a comment on it?
I don't know if I have a comment on it. It's an interesting modification. If you don't like your BERT 43 watt meter, or you've damaged the movement portion and need a replacement, it makes it into a nice sophisticated digital watt meter. If you have a model 43 because you wanted to have a model 43, it's not exactly a model 43 anymore. It's a modified one with a digital indicator and some control settings. So it looks interesting. It's, I think, about $260, and that's just for the display. You need to supply a Model 43 with everything except its galvanometer movement. Yes, Jeff?
CBI is a CB amplifier technician. He's a good one, but he's a CB guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was holding out on that. He made a comment that he thought this meter was wonderful and it would be great for both hams and the CB operators. And, you know, he kind of looked down home country type of someone who would be working on CB rigs for some strange reason.
Okay, any other comments? Let's go to the next one. Three new radios, Tokyo Ham Fair 2024. I was waiting with that information because I thought I'm going to hear from Kenwood the model number of their new transceiver, but they didn't do that. So I decided that I'm going to come out with it. Some guys already heard about that. So we have ESU IC705. We have ICOM I77660. And we have a Kenwood, which is so far known as New Mobile Radio D-Star, VHF, UHF, APRS, and no model number provided. Okay, from whatever is known about that stuff, the ESU FTX-1F is portable SDR transceiver, covers HF to 430 megahertz. So we're talking about HF and 430 megahertz. That includes 50 megahertz. And is the successor of 818ND, FT818ND, and supports C4FM. It's a 6-watt battery that is included in it and 10 watts external power. And this is well. Okay, then we have ICOM 7760. It's a 200 watts plus HF plus 50 megahertz amateur transceiver. It has sort of innovative shack style that is made out of full control head with a separate
WS2N, can you copy Selwyn?
Yeah, it came back just about 30 seconds ago.
AC2GS, WS2N, can you copy Selwyn?
Paul, are you on Selwyn? Well, W2VL's computer came back up, so hopefully it'll reestablish links.
N2XJN, WS2N, do you copy us?
I copy you.
Sound very noisy. Okay. If you're hearing us in over there in the on the Glen Oaks machine, we lost you for about a little over 15 minutes on the Sullivan repeater. Not sure if you can copy Roy or I heard Wes. WS2N.
I will try again. This is AC2GS. Yeah, the whole the All-Star Echo link and the Selden link all went out. The web pages themselves crashed, and someone or something rebooted it finally.
Yes, but very noisy. I just heard Paul. Can you hear me now? But before that, I could hear you in there, but I had no idea what you were saying. Very noisy. Anyway, we lost you for over 15 minutes, and it still doesn't sound right. I don't hear Roy at all, and well, I know the Selden repeater is up and running, but I think the link between the two is having trouble. Back to you, Wes.
And can you hear me now?
Okay, now you sound normal. That's the way I usually hear you. Yeah, I get it. That's okay. Back to you.
Okay, so I don't know what's happened, but I increased the power to 100 watts right now.
That's Roy, I just heard you. You're doubling that right now with Wes.
Yeah, Leslie, someone was jamming you. The All-Star Echo Link and the All-Star node connecting the two repeaters failed. The web server failed, and it just rebooted a couple of minutes ago.
Okay, thank you very much. I have no
understood,
one.
Right. Yeah, we were working out here in Selden, and we lost about 15 minutes. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, well, hopefully little by little people will climb back on Echo Link, and Frank is already on it, so that's good. So we'll piece it together. I don't know why you didn't hear me, except that you know I was operating through RF, and so that's problematic, unfortunately. But with All-Star down for the last 15 minutes, that was the only way I could do this. So, Wesley, I'm sorry that we kind of interrupted you. You were talking about the Japanese ham show and the three major pieces of equipment that the Yaesu, Kenwood, and ICOM announced.
Did you see the description of it?
Okay. I mean, if you want to try and repeat it, because unfortunately you were covered by a lot of background hash and someone's carrier.
Can you say more about the description of those three radios?
Okay.
Yeah, I was asking, can you handle it?
Well, I don't have anything written down in front of me. I thought you wanted to present it. You know, I mean, they're nice. They're new. They're a little bit different. They're prettier. There's color displays, touch screens, all kinds of fun stuff. There's still a lot more questions than there are answers because it's not like anyone presented a complete brochure. It's a show with a lot of the equipment on display, but you know you can't really get into the guts of it all. You mentioned that Expert Systems had a new line of linear amplifiers. They don't really have a new line, as far as I'm aware. They have one new model for that's 1.5 kilowatts that they're designating Toron. I don't know the exact specifications, but if you go to the page, the website, they'll probably give you some detail. It's not available to be bought yet. And knowing my experiences with them in the past, there's a long delay between designing and making the initial models and pumping out enough to interest everyone. So there's probably going to be a bit of time between now and when a lot of people get Toron in their hands.
My description says Expert Amplifiers MTC Radio is Expert Amplifiers New Homes for North America. So it was New Home. I wonder where did they come from, Dr. Ray?
I didn't make out that word, New what?
New Home. New Home for North America. That's what they say. So what is new in it? Did it come from somewhere else?
No, it's going somewhere else. I think I've told this story a few times, but what the heck. I do like Expert Systems. I have one, a 1.3 in my home, in my shack, and I use it, and I like it. It's manufactured in Italy, and the distribution has always been a wee bit problematic. So they had one guy who acted as the distributor in the North America, and he got sick and passed away, and his daughter and his grandsons, who had no idea what ham radio was, decided to take on the business, and that failed rather quickly. So the guy who initially was the repair guy, who was trained in Italy to repair them, took over the distribution, and now he's retired. So there's another company that's acting as a distributor. I forget exactly, Main Trading Company or something. So that's what they mean, that the United States distributor has changed again. This is at least the third time that I've noticed.
Okay, thank you. So we have three radios, YESU FTX1F. It's portable SDR, covers HF to 430 megahertz. And is a successor of 818ND and supports C4FM and has 6 watts battery, 10 watts external power. ICOM IC7760, 200 watts, HF, 50 megahertz, new style of look, and the control head is separate from the RF deck. It has a 7-inch wide by 2.4-inch display and touch screen operation, and is wired by LAN. And then we have a Kenwood mobile radio, no model number provided yet. It's supposed to be sold in 2025, dual receive separate display-based unit GPS receiver, APRS, D-Star, USB-C SD card. Okay, and so far only ICOM IC705 was sold, and there are various people very satisfied with it or not very much satisfied. I wonder if anybody purchased, anybody, one from the people listening right now purchased the IC705.
KD2VHD.
Yeah, Jim?
IC705 is a very interesting piece of equipment, as is the other thing that's going on. But I'd really be more interested in what just happened. What just happened? Very interesting thing just happened, and I think we should talk about it. I can't explain it, but the interaction between webs and links and nodes and repeaters is a technical subject that bears speaking about. I don't expect anybody to solve the situation at the moment, but what's going on?
Wes, do you mind if we kind of pause this and we'll get back to it?
Yes, of course.
Okay, thank you very much, Wes. Well, basically, in the olden days, the way that Selden and Glen Oaks was linked together so that people on one repeater could talk to other people on the other repeater was through an RF link. It was decided a couple of years ago to shift from that to a internet voice over internet protocol called All-Star, that they plugged in All-Star, which gives you access to All-Star nodes, but also can be linked to EchoLink. So they set up an All-Star node, they set the node to also pick up EchoLink, and also pick up the signal from Selden. So that is the nature of the link. That link crashed for some reason and reset for a while, and it generates data in the form of web pages, and the web pages were not loading anymore. So the actual software in the server that made the web server present the pages went bye-bye and reset itself in a little while. Whether this was a hardware reset or a software reset, I can't tell you from here. It looked like the hardware had gone, but since it all came back, it may have just gone through a power recycle and then launched, and now it's working. So I hope that better explains what we just went through.
It certainly paints a picture, but it seems like to me that, and not that there's anything wrong with it, as they say, but we're not speaking to each other over a ham radio network. We're speaking to each other over a internet network. And, that's fine, I guess, but not my cup of tea. Just interesting distinction technically about how we actually get the RF sounds through the airwaves and through each other's speakers. Sounds like we're becoming an internet widget. I'm less than impressed. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, but good or bad, it makes a lot of things far easier. Unfortunately, Limark's repeater gets a little deaf when it reaches Brooklyn. So you heard a weaker signal from me earlier when the All-Star link was down. I had to switch to my RF, which is okay for me, but people kind of complain that it's noisy. So it makes for a better presentation. Think of it as chains in links in a chain. There are internet links, and there are RF links, and it all puts everything together. Those people who talk on Glen Oaks and only Glen Oaks are operating purely RF. Those people purely conversing in Selden, the same thing goes there. When you're talking about the IRLP connection, which we've had for decades, which is internet-based, again, that's internet-based. If you're talking about EchoLink, which many people are able to talk to us from Florida and upstate New York and other places, New Jersey, that's internet. So, if you want to be a purist, so be it. My ultimate idea is if you're having fun, then it's working. If you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong. So, whether it's 100% RF or 98% RF or 72% RF, I don't know. Sometimes you can get a little bit too involved in gatekeeping and such. So, if you want to have a pure RF environment, it's within your abilities to do that. Unfortunately, just in order to kind of be able to serve as many people as humanly possible, you got to use internet to get beyond the local range of our repeaters.
Good explanation. Just to clarify, I wasn't clarifying what we should or should not do, but what are we actually doing? And what does it mean? It's an interesting circumstance as the world gets sucked into the web. Is is radio certainly can connect to the web and can. There's lots of things that can happen. But is that wise in any particular situation? Is a different circumstance and worth conversing about in a technical manner? Anyway, thank you for your feedback. I'm scratching my head on the situation. It's very interesting. Back to that.
Okay, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that tend to be very easily provoked to have them tell you that whatever you're doing is not really ham radio, that what they're doing is really ham radio. So, you know, I mean, it involves RF, it involves radio repeaters, transceivers, repeaters, all antennas, all kinds of things. It just happens to also include internet. And so, if you want to consider it an impure technology, then I think ham radio would then be more classified as a religion than a hobby or an interest. But, different, whatever floats one's boat. A lot of people who think that if you don't contest, you're not a proper ham. Other people, if you don't do CW, you're not a proper ham. The list goes on and on endlessly. So I understand your sentiments. I've heard it on the bands. Talked about other concepts, but this is an expediency. This allows amateur radio operators all over the country to benefit from this repeater, which I think is a good thing ultimately. Again, people will differ.
Hey, Bill.
Yes, Bill.
My father-in-law is famous for talking about his sister, saying that she could have an argument with a argument in a room where she was the only person. Again, do we want an echo chamber? Do we want expansive? It doesn't matter. It's whatever works. I agree with you, Roy, that work. We reach as many as we can. And again, I've heard on this very same frequency people complaining about this, that, and the other. And here they were on this very frequency with the ability to complain. So, really, why complain? You've got your frequency, talk.
H2RY.
Yes, David?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody. I just want to say that, I think people who make those kinds of judgments that would have no idea of the possibilities and, things that, are beyond more the most common and known things of ham radio,
Yeah, but, everyone is free to have their own opinion about things. You may agree or disagree, but, I have a broader concept of what the hobby entails. I don't mind if other technologies. 10 years ago, if you mentioned computers to old-timers, they gave you an argument. The best I could get from some guys back then were that they'd never let a computer sit in their shack. They have one in the living room, and they use it to send emails to their grandchildren. So, there are people with all kinds of beliefs, and as long as they don't frighten the horses, they're free to have them, at least in my mind.
PhD.
Yes, Jim?
I guess what's on the forefront of my mind, and I'm just some wacky guy out in the middle of Long Island. I'm from Brooklyn, literally, but I live out here halfway to Montauk. But the thing that strikes me more than anything, less than philosophically, is the fact that so many of the things that seem to be happening to radio make it as vulnerable to small little oopses and shut the whole thing down as the net. And the net, as we've seen, is very vulnerable to all kinds of crap. And I'd like to see a more resilient system. That's what I think. Just me. Just some schmuck out there putting them on. That's all.
Okay, and you have the right to have that opinion. I know the old days when it was a radio link, and the radio link had problems. Everything ultimately has problems. If you're looking for a perfect solution, then we're back in philosophy and religion and such. It wasn't that great when it was a radio link, you just have to unfortunately suffer these glitches. They give us benefits, and they open us up to new ways of things going wrong, which kind of I remind people of at the beginning of every one of my technical nets, that I proviso that that things won't go screwy like they did today, because they do go screwy, and that's part of life, unfortunately, in the big city.
I do not propose fictitiously eliminating glitches, just learning from them. It's an interesting circumstance that happened, and while it's not a lot of interesting technical repercussions to learn from, I think I'm processing it as we speak.
Well, you know, hopefully the repeater technical crew will get a look at the log. Because a lot of these things are logged. If it was a power failure, then it might require some replacement for the uninterruptible power supply that interrupted itself, which has happened in the past. If it's a glitch in the software, if it's a glitch in the computer, you know, they'll have to figure it out, and hopefully they'll take steps to lessen the chances of something similar happening again. This is the first time I've ever noticed this particular glitch, and I've been staring at these windows every Sunday night for about 5 or 6 years. So you know, I mean, each glitch seems to be a little bit different, unfortunately, or fortunately.
Learning opportunities. Thank you, Roy. I consumed enough of your time. Back to your regularly scheduled program, KD2VHC.
Okay, very good, Jim. Wes, back to you.
Okay. So, we talked about FTX 1F, and we tried to compare it to Kenwood 2000, which is a quite known radio, and quite old right now. I have two of them. One is the mobile version, and the other one is the desk version. The only difference I see is the power, because Kenwood gives 100 watts, and this FTX 1F gives 10 watts, but it gives you covers HF to 430 megahertz, which is excellent. So I hope, based on the review, it would be a good choice. Although there is one guy who says, "Let me drop." The build quality is lacking nothing new. The viewing angle is not good. The camera tripod over, and the small camera tripod fell over so many times. I don't know what he's talking about. The plastic jacks for the poor sounding speaker mic were fragile in comparison to jacks in other Chinese radios. The display is acceptable, but didn't respond to light touches by my finger, requiring me to have to hold the unit to use the touch screen. The speaker mic didn't have a stain relief, I don't know what it is, and SD card space was inaccessible without surgical clamps and without great care. The card can go in at the angle, and it's difficult to remove. So that was the only guy who gave the 2 stars on EHAM review, but others rather keep it in 5 stars. So I suggest to read it before making your choices. $1,250 RS... MSRP, no, $1,299. MSRP, so I understand that we can buy it probably about $900 or $1,000. Dr. Roy.
G2RY listening.
Okay, David.
Did they come out?
Okay, this is AC2GS. Were you saying the word strain relief?
Okay. No, SD card. They were talking about the SD card that it doesn't fit and it's hard to remove. He was complaining about touch screen. Back to you.
Oh, okay. I thought you said stain relief, like the only thing you think that means is strain relief, but that's the only thing I had.
Oh, okay. Yes, stain relief. S-T-A-I-N, stain relief. I have no idea what the guy is talking about, but too.
Yeah, I think he just dropped his R.
Okay. So, if there are no comments, we can go to the next one.
Okay. I think David wants to ask a question. Do you want to yield again or not? It's up to you.
Okay,
David?
Thank you, Wesley. I just set up an MMDVM with... D-Star MMDVM interface high-star configuration. And this little thing, you know, it has a tiny OLED screen and a fan that doesn't work. And the fan doesn't work because one of the wires was clipped. But the fan itself is like a heat sink. And there is some heat coming out of it. Do you think I can just leave it this way? What do you think, Roy?
Well, it depends on how heavily you use it. You don't want it to overheat too much because that's going to age the electronics, and the capacitors and such will fail at an earlier time. So, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, it's coming up to winter time, so if anything, unless you have a great heating system, things are going to be a little chilly, so you might have time to let it slide. Ultimately, I think you should investigate the possibility of splicing some wires and getting it operational because, you know, unless the life expectancy of the unit isn't that important to you, you know, if it's a somewhat disposable commodity, you might not mind if it dies one day, but it will die at a earlier age without a fan than it would with a fan.
QSL. Well, a fan, there's a bunch of holes where the fan is inside, holes are on the outside going to the inside. And if I turn it so that the holes are facing up, then the heat could rise through those holes, through that fan heat sink, and it should work okay.
Again, it depends on how much heat dissipation you need. Now, this sounds like it's a Raspberry Pi hotspot. A Raspberry Pi software, I think, offers thermal readings. So you could actually find out the internal temperature of the unit. And, you know, compare it with other people's Raspberry Pis. You know, if it's below 140 degrees Fahrenheit, it's okay. If it starts to go to 150, 160, 170, 180, you get increasingly problematic about providing more thermal regulation. Yes, it has holes, it has ventilation holes, because it wouldn't be terribly useful with a fan if it didn't have ventilation holes. But just having heat rise doesn't go at high enough rate sometimes for the device needs to have its heat dissipated. So again, you'll get away with it for a while, especially during the cold weather, but if it gets hot again in the summer and you don't do anything about it, chances are if it had a four-year life expectancy, you'll end up with a two-year life expectancy or a one-year life expectancy. So again, can you get away with it? Yeah. Should you? Probably if you have the ability to splice the fan wire together again, that probably would be for the best. I will share with you a story. I have an all-star node in addition to hotspots, and it was never quite right. The fan was always noisy, and ultimately it got noisier and noisier, and also it would lock up on occasion once every 3-4 days. So I contacted the manufacturer, and I sent it back, and he swapped out the fan for one that actually worked, and not only does it not make an annoying noise in the background, but it hasn't locked up since I got it returned. So these electronics, if they have fans in them, they're meant to be there. The designer knows what the heat dissipation is for such things, and there's a reason why they stuck a fan in there, because it cost them money. So if they could get away more cheaply by not putting a fan in, they would. So, again, it'll work until it stops working. If that's okay with you, then that's fine. If not, again, I would contemplate the possibility of splicing the wire or replacing the fan, whatever works best.
QSL. Yeah, I need like a 3.5-inch piece of black wire and soldering iron with a solder and carefully insulate where the solder was set and to do it. But, you know, even so, it doesn't seem to be too bad. I'm going to look and see. I'm trying to digital voice dashboard. Is that where I would find the temperature?
I'm not 100% sure where they put it. I think they usually put it in the dashboard. I think so.
USL. Well, for some reason here, the website's not coming up. Neither the duplex hotspot for DMR nor the D-Star hotspot. So maybe I have to wait until their sites are accessible. But, you know, also I had to use a ICOM ID31A plus HT, which is all UHF, and the MMDVM is simplex, and for some reason, I have to set it up for duplex with a zero plus or minus. And, you know, I don't understand why that is, but it's the only way I can get it to work.
Okay, I'm not really familiar with that radio. I'm a little confused that the web pages don't come up. The web pages, I would assume, are inherent. Their web server is inside the Raspberry, the Pi Star. So, you know, if the Pi Star isn't giving you a web page, then you might want to just kind of power it off and power it back on and see if that wakes it up and lets you get into the web pages. It's not a server-based operation that goes across the world. It's just you're getting into a web server built in the Raspberry Pi that's part of the Pi Star.
All right, I started up now again.
Okay, and you know, I don't know exactly your version because unfortunately, Raspberry Pi Star has been forked, I think. And there's a variant that I'm using on one of my hotspots that's a little bit different than the Pi Star open source software. But these things should have a screen where they give system information. There might be an extra button on the dashboard that says system info, and when you press it, it reveals a couple of values for things going on the inside the PyStar.
We're a little bit short of time, so I would like to finish it.
Okay. So, David, hopefully I gave you something to think about. And if you have any other questions, comments, or observations, there's always next Sunday.
QSL, yes, you did. You gave me a lot of good information. Thank you very much. I just need to know if this hotspot is 140 degrees Fahrenheit or less. And I know that the chips have heat sinks on them, KG2RY.
Yeah, but when push comes to shove, you really don't want to see the temperature going beyond 140. That's usually when the fans are set to go on to maximum thrust. So I wish you good luck with that, and let me know how it works out for you. And Wes, we'll go back to you. Thank you very much for letting David ask his question.
My pleasure. The next subject is we were talking about a network analyzer, portable one, very much inexpensive one that we could use for our antennas, but it is not always that you have a portable, inexpensive network analyzer with that has also a full feature. Full feature the ability to see the signal, and the CT Kini SA Ultra is interesting because it has a sweeping generator. So for spectrum analyzer, it's something very much uncommon at this price. So if I go to the description, it says CT-SEESII, CC Tiny, SA is ultra spectrum analyzer with 25-watt attenuator, 4-inch display, 100 kilohertz to 5.3 gigahertz, handheld tiny frequency analyzer with 32 gigabyte card and 100 kilohertz to 800 megahertz, MF, HF, VHF, UHF input, and the 2024 software upgrade. So, Dr. Roy has probably two or three vector network analyzers, but do you have also spectrum analyzer to it, or is it included in one of the units that you have?
AC2GS. No, it's not included in any of the network analyzers. I have three. One is the little nano VNA that I promote because it's the cheapest, and I have a couple of others out there. But I have the previous version of that device. I mentioned it at least twice on technical nets in the past. It was called the Tiny SA. I think the new one is called the Tiny SA Ultra. I don't know if it's cost effective to buy the Ultra if you already own the original. It has some additional features, but, I think it costs something like $150, which is starting to slowly go up in price.
This one is $199.99, so we're talking about $200 plus tax, and it does really have plenty nice features. So for me, it was important because it has a tracking and sweeping generator. It goes to 5.3 gigahertz, and it's a pair VNA and spectrum analyzer, two units, which I like the most because they are two independent units. You're going to have a lot of usage for it. And we're talking about $1,000 of value of comparing to my equipment, which is 80.